I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC. Are
you ready? Straight up 6 o'clock on our Tuesday show. A lot of football to get to today. But let's start with a little off-the-field college football. When I was in college, I would have done anything to get the money I needed to go on a party weekend with a sorority or a fraternity down to the beach, or to get a weekend to go into the city for drinks or whatever. These North Carolina players, 13 of them suspended for selling their Jordan shoes right off the bat. It includes their starting quarterback, who's going to miss 4 games now. Would you have sold your sneakers back in the day on the side to grab a little extra cash?
No, I sold plasma.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. There were kids that were selling plasma and blood. And we used to go around people's porches, and they would leave kegs, and it didn't seem like they needed them to return for the deposit, so we'd return them for the deposit for them.
So they would just, like, post-party, they would just have an empty keg sitting out there?
Yeah, just empty kegs out there, and you could roll it back to Bruno's.
That was good recycling.
Get a 10 bucks. You can get 10 of those a night. Simple math, 100 bucks.
You are almost doing a public service.
Right. I was a delivery man. I was the go-between.
Yeah.
So, yes, to answer your question, I probably would have done this back in the day.
Brown, you?
Well, here's what I used to do is, because the first year I was at Jacksonville State, I was on scholarship. And after that, my parents were kind enough to pay for my college, which they probably shouldn't have done. They should have made me work for it, but they were nice. And I would always, the first week of class, try to determine if you were going to actually need the textbook. I felt like I could tell in 1 week if I was going to need the textbook or not.
Right. No, I've done this.
And then I would immediately go sell the textbook, because the value would drop the deeper you went in the semester. It was better if you sold it early in the semester.
So you'd almost get full value back.
Almost. No, the old textbook game is a pretty big racket, so you would never get full value. But you're right. The closer you could get to the start of the semester, the closer you could remain at full value.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't even know why I bought books.
Yeah, I never used them when I kept them. That's the thing I learned later in my college life is
pocket the money.
Even the ones I thought I was going to need, I never used.
So to the point of the matter is, when you're in college, you do just about anything near that line to get a little extra cash. North Carolina is going to be hit pretty hard. This is a huge year for Larry Fedora there in Chapel Hill, and now you're starting off with this. This isn't like the credit card 8 down in Gainesville last year, when they were taking credit card numbers of fellow students and others and using credit cards and such.
This, you know, is how we'll spend
selling
this,
your
though.
Sneakers.
This will be another one of these platforms for athletes that need to be paid.
Taking advantage of us.
Yeah. These guys, you know, they've been taken advantage of, and this is the reason you've got 13 guys that are suspended now. I agree with you, though. I think when you look at Larry Fedora, and again, just go back to 2015, where they were maybe a play or two away in that ACC championship game against Clemson for going to the 14 playoff, and now they're coming off 5 or 6 wins and 3 wins.
Doesn't this suspension seem really steep? It's a secondary NCAA violation that North Carolina themselves self-reported. And the starting quarterback's going to get 4 games?
Yeah.
I thought if we paid back the value of this, we get off without missing a game.
Well, historically, that's been true. That happened in Tuscaloosa with Captain Anderson taking them out on the fishing boat.
Yeah, fishing trips and a computer, I think, one time or something.
So where do you stand on this? Now, obviously, it's an NCAA violation, but just in a vacuum, do you guys have a problem with...
No, it's their shoes.
But you were given the shoes.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, if they're actually taking the shoes out of stock from the athletic department and it's not their
shoes...
They're
stealing at that point.
Yeah, then they're stealing. But if you're given a pair of shoes and you decide that you want to turn around and flip it, to me, it's your property.
So you're okay with selling something you've been given?
Yes.
Okay. But the secondary violation is we're a Nike school, Nike Jordan school, and so we're going to Lance, you don't have your shoes anymore. Here's another pair. Then Lance is back. Lance
lost
have
them
shoes.
Again.
Here's another pair.
Those didn't fit either.
Yeah. I need a size 8 this time, please.
I understand it gets to the old slippery slope there, Dunaway, but I guess my point is, look, maybe it's a tacky look.
No, that's what I was asking. Is
it almost like re-gifting?
On principle, Are you okay with selling something you've been given? I think it is. I mean, that could be a good Dreamland poll because I wonder how people feel about
that. Yeah, I guess it depends on what it is. Like, if you guys give me a Christmas present, which hopefully we'll never get to that point where we're giving each other Christmas presents.
Yeah, let's go have Christmas spirit on the show.
If we have not done it yet, if we didn't do it the first year of our relationship, chances are we're not going to crank that up year 13.
I think it's a little different if you do something like that. But, I mean, if the university decides to issue a pair of shoes, I mean, you're one of their athletes and you're actually doing something for them. I'm trying to figure out which pair this is. I mean, when you Google UNC Nike shoes, I've never seen so many images in my life.
It was a throwback pair, right?
Yeah, a retro special edition Nike Jordan shoe.
You think it was the old school Jordans like these, which I love?
That is exactly what they were. I guarantee you.
I couldn't have sold those. I would have kept those.
So for those,
of course, I would have bought them.
Those that can't see what Lance is talking about on TV, it's
almost the 85, the original model that was in red, black, and white. It's just in the Carolina blue and the white. Beautiful shoe.
How much do you think you could get for those on the black market?
Well, I mean, right now, the highest bid on this, I'm just on this one website, is $305.
So that's an easy $305 right in your pocket.
Yeah.
I'd like to know how much they got for this, how many pairs they sold. I'm just blown away that the starting quarterback is going to miss four games.
For selling shoes?
Yeah. Well, the good news is he's not good.
He started seven games last year.
Chassert wasn't a great quarterback, and that's been one of the problems for Larry Fedora. You know, when he had Trubisky, going back to Marquise Williams, he had really good quarterbacks, and that offense really popped. But last year, the offense was down. I mean, 2 years ago, they averaged over 40 points per game. And just last year, 26 points per game.
So that's the off-the-field story that few people are talking about. The one that everyone's talking about is Urban Meyer and his situation at Ohio State. They held a rally last night at Ohio Stadium there at the Horseshoe. And I'd seen where 25,000 people had signed a petition or more to keep Urban Meyer through all of this, something we've said for a long time we believe will happen, some suspension, but he'll end up still being the coach. But last night they have what was estimated at 100 fans show up for one of the lamest support rallies I have ever seen. It literally looked like, you know, Law and Order or a show like that. If they
got a couple of extras out there on the corner.
If they needed to shoot a scene of people protesting, it looked like that's what they were doing. Like our friend Laurel, one of our producers.
She'd run out and get the poster board and make a couple of signs.
She drew up a couple of signs. ESPN is fake news was one of the signs there.
No, that's literally.
Part your hair the other way.
Yeah. ESPN is fake news is one of the signs. ESPN barely reported on this initially.
Yeah. And another one was fire ESPN.
I know. Yeah. They had to be drug into the story because they didn't want to retweet Brett McMurphy.
It was the guy that subscribed to ESPN Plus.
It was the guy ESPN fired that broke the story. Yeah. It was not a big support for Urban Meyer. I know he has more support than that to be the head coach. It's just a bad look. You don't want to go out and say, I'm publicly supporting this until I get all the facts, I guess.
I mean, again, you mentioned 100 fans show up, and they start chanting Urban Meyer. They sing the university fight song, and they leave in 20 minutes. I mean, that's not much effort right there.
It really isn't.
But you guys, job well done. Yeah. I think they got the message.
I mean, that shows you a lot of people are willing to put their name on a petition, but when they knew their face was going to be on camera, they were not willing to get out there, were they?
What would it take for you guys to have to protest something? I mean, maybe I'm just lazy in every aspect of life, but there is nothing that's going to get me on the corner.
Well, then last night's protest was just for you.
It would have been quick, but you wouldn't have got me out there for 20 minutes. I cannot imagine going out.
No traffic, easy parking.
And being that involved in something to actually hold a sign.
As I watched SportsCenter report it last night, they did not even have a sound system for the guy who was the rallying point, the guy that was giving the speech.
Based on the crowd, I don't know if he needed it.
You guys come close. Yeah. We can do this. It was not a good day for the rally there. And for Ohio State, it was pretty quiet, except for the players checking into their hotel as they're running camp. And if you wonder about the players, Stu, give me cut one real quick. Here's Edward Ashoff, one of many media people who are in Columbus covering this story, I guess, for the next 13 days. Ashoff finally talking about the players themselves. They've had three practices, and then they moved into a hotel downtown in Columbus where they will stay for a while during their camp, something they do all the time anyway. This isn't something new. But Ashoff says so far the players have a good attitude about all this.
They seem to be pretty relaxed, and a source told me that so far, players haven't really talked about the investigation. They haven't even talked about the fact that there's now a timeline, and that has really helped this staff keep them focused.
So do you think at some point this leaks into the locker room and impacts the season for Ohio State, the actual outcome of games?
I don't know. I'm so torn on this whole thing. I mean, last week, Dunaway, I'm an idiot because I thought Urban Meyer was going to get fired. Now I've done a complete 180 just the way this thing has played out. I don't think it will. I think this team's way too talented, and I think this could be like a rallying point. You know, as much as I like Michigan coming out of the Big Ten and going to the college football playoff, this ultimately might be the best thing that happens to Ohio State.
You know, well, boy, that'd be...
Well, I mean, I hate to say it like
no,
that.
No, I know.
You know what I mean, though. Like, I could see Urban Meyer really use this as a rally cry, us against the world.
Yeah, I think sometimes we overestimate how much 18 to 20-year-olds are paying attention to things. Like, I know they're aware of the story, and I know they got to be aware of the fact that their coach is on paid administrative leave.
But what they do pay attention to is everybody's against our coach. They want our coach out. We love this guy. We're going to go out. We're going to show the world how much we're going to play for this guy.
Yeah, clear eyes, full hearts.
Yeah.
Drawing everybody together there. Brown, you're making it sound like it's practice number 3 at Columbus, and they're looking around, and they're like, where's Urban? I have not heard him blow a whistle all week.
He really likes this team. He's not coming to practice.
Can you imagine what it would be to not have a boss for a while?
Yeah.
Selling your textbooks back in the day made for a good end of the semester weekend. Brown's right, though. You had to get it out early.
Yeah, boy. They lost all their value.
I mean,
it
was the baseball card racket. You remember in the old Beckett guide, your card's worth $30, and you go to the baseball card shop, and he'd be like, I'll give you 14 for it.
Malcolm says, LMAO, at Lance, saying that nothing he cares enough about to ever see him standing on the corner holding his sign.
No, I agree with him. I cannot.
Oh, if we brought back prohibition.
No, that's what John says. Yeah. John says a vote on statewide prohibition would make LT an activist. Did you see that?
Yeah, maybe.
He'd be throwing his snake handles,
handler.
Snake handler. Snake handlers
into the delivery.
You guys do it.
But it was a good line.
I mean, a protest seems like a lot of work.
It does. I cannot think of anything. I mean, there are some things I'm passionate about, but
golfing is illegal tomorrow. Starting tomorrow, golfing is illegal. Anybody will be given a hefty fine.
I just become a bootlegger, man. I just start playing in private.
Golden tea at the house.
Yeah. Tiger Woods.
No, we can't get a driver here. There's people right over the hill. Hit a 7-iron.
Imagine how the game changes if you're a bootlegger doing it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anything that would have me fired up enough, though, to go to a protest. I'm with you, Lance, especially to make signs for one. Hey there, you road warrior business traveler. You want to win your next summer road trip? Stay at La Quinta. With stylish updated lobbies and renovated rooms, you've got 2 more ways to win at business. Book now at LQ.com.
My favorite part is that it didn't sound like you finished your conversation and started to read at all. You
snuck the commercial in.
It did not sneak in at all.
It was my first read, too, on that one, and that was a different copy from yesterday, so it snuck up on me, too.
18 after on the Jocks Roundtable with LTD&B. Intriguing storylines as we move in for coaches. 25 of them Pat 40 gave us. We won't go through all of them, but you do find yourself with some interesting names in interesting situations. For instance, Brian Kelly going into his 9th season. It's been a long time since he took a whipping from Alabama down in that national championship game. He's still chugging along. He's the longest tenured Notre Dame coach since Lou Holtz. And he is going into a season where the projections are all over the board for Notre Dame. Some people will go into the season projecting them as a college football playoff team, contender, and some will say schedule too tough, seven win season. So that's where Brian Kelly is, 9th season there at Notre Dame.
You go back to 2012 when they were undefeated, and you mentioned the whipping down at the Orange Bowl, the hands of Nick Saban in Alabama. I think that's bought him a little equity. He's had some good years, though. I go back to 2015. I still believe that 10-3 squad was one of the 5 best teams in college football. A lot of injuries that year. Last year, their 10-3 squad was a really good squad. I mean, you go back to that Georgia game. If that flips the other way, who knows where they are? You know, they had that really bad outing against Miami, but I thought it was a really good team last year that didn't get great consistent quarterback play from Brandon Wimbush. I'm on the side that I think Notre Dame, if they can navigate this schedule somehow, is going to have an opportunity at the end of the season. But, you know, obviously week one is such a swing game against Michigan. If they get by Michigan, watch out.
Can I bring – how old is Brian Kelly? This is shocking to me.
Brian Kelly is 56.
I was going to say 56 on the nose, but you saying surprising is going to put me right at 50. Then.
No, 56 is not the surprising part. And the surprising part to me, this is year.
How old is he?
Well, he's 56. You nailed it, of course. Okay. Well, of course he nailed it. The surprising part to me, if I do the math, he's been a coach since 91. A head coach since 91.
Where was his first job?
Grand Valley State, which is a really good, what are they, like D2, I believe?
Yeah, but that would have put him at 29.
I know, but think about how long he's been a head coach. I mean, that's kind of my point. Because he did Grand Valley State for quite a while, and then a couple quick stops at Central Michigan and Cincinnati before getting the Notre Dame.
He's never not won championships until he got to Notre Dame, and I think this really is an indictment on how difficult this job is now. People will disagree with that.
I was going to say that because he has been successful everywhere. Even Central Michigan, he went 9-4 and went to the Motor City Bowl, but took Cincinnati to the Orange and the Sugar, guys. That's Cincinnati. Now, he didn't end up coaching the Sugar because he left, but had them in the Orange and Sugar Bowl, but he can't get it done at Notre Dame.
Dabo Swinney's on this list. Intriguing by the fact that Pat points out that there hasn't been a season that Clemson hasn't improved since Dabo got it going. And last year was the first time he sort of hit a wall, that it was a step back, of course, from a national championship. It's hard to go better than that, to improve from that. So now, can it be another step backwards or another step forward? Most people are projecting it to be one of the easiest step forward.
You know, I think it's almost laughable because I kind of agree with you. It seemed like a step backwards last year. They won 12 games, Brown. They won the ACC championship. They were the number one seed in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
The expectation back in the day for Clemson was 7 or 8 wins. Now Dabo's got them in a situation where you're the number one seed in the college football playoff. You lose to the eventual national champion, and it's a step backwards.
It's kind of funny that we're talking about Kelly Bryant losing his job, because I really thought last year, I mean, Deshaun Watson's probably the best player in Clemson history, right? I know Brian Dawkins just went into the Hall of Fame, so maybe Bryant should be in the discussion.
I think Brian would be in this discussion. I think a guy like C.J. Spiller's probably there. But, yeah, I mean, the best player in Clemson history to me would be Deshaun Watson.
And I didn't think there was that big a drop-off. Now, hear what I'm saying. What you would normally have from the best player in school history to the next quarterback,
right?
I didn't think it was that big a drop-off. Now, there was a drop-off. Kelly Bryant was not Deshaun Watson. But don't you normally expect a much larger drop-off when you lose the best player in school history?
For your point, Cam Newton, arguably the best season in Auburn football history.
Best quarterback in Auburn history, though. I don't have a problem saying that.
And then right after that, there was a drop-off. You had an adjustment period.
Yeah, and that normally happens. I mean, Tim Tebow. Look at Tim Tebow. When Florida lost him, there was a pretty big drop-off, right?
Right.
When you lose a guy of that caliber. But, Lance, I just didn't think there was that as big a drop-off as you would have expected, I guess is the best way for me to word that, with Kelly Bryant last year. I didn't think that team took a step back last year.
I don't know about the postseason. I think we've talked about this. If you could only pick one team for the college football playoff, I think everyone would go Clemson, right?
Because of the conference.
It just can't be that predictable in college football. And this is almost, to me, if you go back to Florida, I guess it was in 2009, and you go back to Ohio State in 2015, it's almost too predictable for Clemson. It's almost like something will happen, whether it's Miami in the ACC championship game, or there's going to be a big-time surprise like a Florida State that really emerges. But it seems like something will happen this season.
Urban Meyer's number one on Pat's story, and you can read it at Yahoo. You know why Urban's number one. He says originally he was not number one. He is catapulted to that because of what is going on. Chip Kelly is two on the list, which I assume would have been number one. And he sort of is the forgotten guy going into this season at UCLA. I don't know how much you can expect Chip to turn it around in one season there.
I don't think you can, Dunaway. It's still a young team, and the defense was absolute garbage last year. So you got to clean up the mess that Jim Mora Jr. left. So I think it's going to take a little bit for Chip Kelly. He's got to find his quarterback, too. And you've got a guy like Wilton Spate who's buying in. Look, I'm not the most athletic guy, but when you look at what he was able to do in the NFL with guys like Sam Bradford and Nick Foles, I think there's a spot for me. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, though, is your true freshman quarterback. A guy that ultimately will be the quarterback of the future, and you just wonder how soon he will get in for Chip Kelly.
And you say he's got to find his quarterback. When you think of Chip Kelly's time at Oregon, it is riddled with great quarterback, right?
So as a offensive coordinator, Dennis Dixon was probably the best.
Was going to win the Heisman, right, before he broke his leg?
Yeah, but the kid that played against Auburn, Darren, what was the kid's name?
I can't remember his name. We've done this before.
But he was really good in that system. Didn't look good in the national championship game. But he's always, and Marcus Mariota obviously is one of the best college quarterbacks we've ever seen. But, yeah, he's always had really good quarterbacks. And if you can get an absolute stud quarterback to run that system at UCLA, you get some other athletes around him. I mean, UCLA's not that far off. They had back-to-back 10-win seasons in 13 and 14.
Darren Thomas.
Darren Thomas.
The name you're looking for.
Was really good. Scary going into that game, and then Auburn shut him down. Herm Edwards, Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban makes the top five as well. Six national championships, five at Alabama. But the turnover in Tuscaloosa of the coaching staff is what lands Nick Saban on this list, and that's something we've talked about a lot on the offseason. Scott Frost, and then there's Kirby Smart. Like Dabo Swinney, the expectations are high, and his recruiting is unreal right now. But there is some pressure on Kirby this year because Georgia fans are moving past last year's national championship loss pretty easily, only because they believe we're going to be right back there this season.
But it's been so long, and you had your fingers on the trophy, and that was one of those at halftime. Nobody believed Georgia was going to lose that game based on the way the defense was playing, so you were so close in year two. I think a lot of people are still out there trying to figure out, is Kirby Smart more of the 8-5 or more of the 13-2? I think we all lean in the camp he's going to be more of the 13-2, his ability to recruit. He seems the closest to Nick Saban that we've had from the Nick Saban tree. I don't think they're going anywhere. I don't think they'll be as good this year, but I think they'll be right there in the mix.
A lot of staff continuity, for what it's worth. I don't know if everybody's thrilled about Jim Chaney coming back, but you got a lot of staff continuity there.
Jeremiah is in the pond today calling us on the Jocks Roundtable. Good morning to you, Jeremiah.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Guys? Great. You doing all right?
Doing well. I just wanted to say, you know, it's so amazing to me, man, you know, just watching this college football scope and just hearing, you know, having to talk about coaching and hearing you guys talk about coaching, man. You know, just to think about, like, you know, Dabo Swinney has been at Clemson for, like, 10 whole years now, right?
Right. Yes. It's been a while now, yeah.
Yeah, just think about that for a moment. Like, Dabo Swinney been at Clemson for 10 whole years, but yet now, since he made it to a national championship, lost one, everybody praised him to be, like, this great coach, but they don't think about the struggle that he had, you know, 7 years prior at Clemson. You know, it's like, it's not like 2010, maybe, you know, 2015 that people were saying, oh, Clemson is a great program. I mean, he's been there 6 years. Look what he had to build it on up.
He's going into his 11th season this season, and three straight years in the college football playoffs has him near the top of the food chain and coaching, but he had some ACC championships before that.
He did, and for what it's worth, you know, ever since that first year where he took over in the middle of the season after Tommy Bowden was fired, he's only finished out of first or second in his division once. I mean, that's pretty impressive, I think. I mean, I know the ACC is not a backbreaker, but...
But in that division, you had a national champion,
yeah,
and you also had a college football playoff team.
That's right, and since 2011, when he really got it clicking there, he's 10 wins or more every year, and he's first or second in the division every single year. Most of the time, it's first. So he's constantly taking you to your conference championship game.
28 after on the Jocks Roundtable. The troll today says, since we're so apathetic about getting out with signs to protest anything, the troll says that our basketball bracket punishment for second place next year could be the loser has to join a protest and march with a sign on any social issue of our choosing.
Well, there's one every weekend.
We get to pick the issue?
Yeah.
we still got to send them to Manali.
We're going to do it.
Oh, I thought that was happening in August.
Well, but my issue with August is I'm having a tough time grasping everyone's vacation because it keeps getting added.
Well, I think if you do a Monday, Tuesday, you're fine.
Well, I thought that until Dunaway added his most recent vacation.
Had you booked it already?
I had not, but that was when I was aiming for it.
28 after, I knew it was going to be my fault, Rockstar.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I just said right there. Yeah.
Football, some of the headlines for you out there. We told you about the big commitment at Texas A&M. Dylan Wright picks Texas A&M over Texas. Billy Lucci, who's been covering Texas A&M for 20 years, says this is the strongest recruiting effort he's ever seen at Texas A&M.
That's a pretty big statement, but, I mean, that's what we know Jimbo Fisher for at Florida State, right? I mean, guy, he could flat recruit down at Florida State. Like Lance said yesterday, if you watch Last Chance U, he was throwing a pretty wide net at quarterback.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we saw it at Florida State, though, for years.
Yeah.
Texas A&M, you know, Sumlin didn't do a horrible job, did he?
I didn't think so. Not horrible.
Didn't translate to wins.
No.
Over at Alabama, helmets and shoulder pads yesterday. A possibility of another big-time recruit joining the Alabama team at some point. Five-star linebacker Ale Cajo has left Washington. Chris Peterson grants the five-star linebacker his release. The Seattle Times reporting Alabama is in the mix. He was a finalist in the recruiting process with Washington. But Bruce Feldman says BYU, he's from Reno, BYU is a likely landing place. Auburn getting ready to play Washington in that opener over in Atlanta in 25 days. Keeping an eye on Washington practices for you. The number one offense, you know what they haven't done all camp against the number one defense?
Score a touchdown.
Score a touchdown, according to reports from Washington camp. Either that's, you know, how that works. Either the offense is struggling or the defense is really good. Speaking of Auburn, family tradition continues. Basketball assistant Wes Flanagan signs his son yesterday. Alan Flanagan ends up picking Auburn for his basketball destination. He's a four-star small forward. And that's your headlines this morning. 7:02 as you drive into work. AL.com, a friend of ours, they have a the story down there. We read them all the time. You do too. 15 single-game records in college football that may be hard to break. And you're going to wow us with some of these numbers.
Oh, these are pretty incredible. And Brown, help me out. Is it Mark Inna Bennett?
I don't know Mark, but yeah, that's the way I've always said it.
Yeah, I think that's the correct way to pronounce it. But anyway, he does a really good job for Yale.com, and he actually compiled this. But, you know, he goes on to say in 85 seasons, some strange and wondrous things have happened in SEC football games. Some of these things maybe never repeated again. What do you think the record for most interceptions by an individual in an SEC game would be?
Like, I've thrown interceptions or I've picked off an interception?
A defensive back to pick them off.
When you say interceptions in the SEC, Brown, I usually go back to Auburn, LSU.
It wasn't the same guy every time, though.
It wasn't, but that's where I go for interceptions. Yeah. Was it in the Auburn, LSU game?
Well, this is not by team. This is by individual. And there's two guys, Mississippi State's Jack Nix and Auburn's junior Rose Green, who you guys remember.
Oh, yeah.
Both intercepted four passes. Nick set the SEC mark back in 1939 against Arkansas. Rose Green did it in an Auburn 34-10 victory over Tennessee on October 2nd of 2004.
Yeah, you had the right team just a decade later there, Dunaway.
I mean, four picks for an individual in a game. That's
amazing.
Hard to beat.
That is tough. I mean, that's a fluky thing.
At that point, I'm checking history to see if the quarterback on the other team is friends with the defensive back.
I'll say this. That one could be tied, and I wouldn't be blown away. This next one, we'll never see it again. Ole Miss halfback Arnold Showboat Boykin. How many touchdowns in one game, one individual?
I mean, his nickname is Showboat?
Yeah.
Seven.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the name
very
Showboat.
Very good, Brown.
Yeah, that's untouchable.
Carried the football only 14 times in Ole Miss's 49-7 win over Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl on December 1st of 1951, but half of his rushing attempts ended up in the end zone. He went for 187 on 14 carries and seven touchdowns.
I didn't give him the ball enough.
So it wasn't like one-yard dives. He was a middle-of-the-field runner, too. Okay.
I guess the only way we could see this again is maybe if we went to, like, overtime, 8, 9, 10 overtimes.
Yeah, or quarterback does it, running the football a lot.
Now, only three other SEC players have scored six, but seven is a record. How many? Nine interceptions, one individual. I know this will never happen again.
Throwing?
Yeah, one game.
You don't get to be in the game that way.
I think you'll get the hook at some point.
Yeah, that's my point. You guys are going to be blown away by this. And this is a big-time name.
I remember a story like, I mean, I do remember that it is a big-time name, but I can't remember who it is.
Now, it's 1969. Would that help you guys?
Not Scott Hunter, though.
No, did not play for state school.
Okay. I don't know.
John Reeves from Florida.
Oh, wow.
Now, on November 1st of 1969, he threw 66 passes. At that time, it was the most by a quarterback in SEC history. In those 66 passes, nine were picked off.
He had to be doing something positive to stay in the game.
I mean, this guy played professional football from 72 to 87 in the NFL and the USFL, but nine picks? You guys feel confident that never happens again?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, you don't get to stay in there that long. We've put Jalen in the game by then.
Okay, one individual number of return punts in a game.
Like, for a touchdown?
No, how many attempts he would have.
Gosh, I mean, eight punts is a lot of punts in a game.
Yeah, I'll say the record's 11 then.
On October 24th of 1936, Mississippi State's A.B. Stubbs ran back 17 punts.
17?
For 122 yards. How bad do you think this game was in the Bulldogs' 0-0 tie with TCU and Dallas?
Mississippi State tradition, man. 0 or 3-2 games.
How worked is that guy, though? 17 return punts.
I mean, there had to be some first or second down punting at that point, right? Your defense is playing so good.
Stubbs, get out there.
You just kick it right back to him.
I was actually at this next game. I think you guys might have been. Wide receiver, most receptions in a game ever.
Oh, was this Josh Reed versus Alabama?
It was.
I was at that game. Man, he dominated.
19 grabs. I forgot. I know Rohan Davey had a big game, but 528 passing yards for a Nick Saban squad.
Yeah.
In a 35-21 LSU win over Alabama.
I was always surprised the score wasn't higher. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
35 points. I remember doing the Mike Shula show the next day, and Shula saying, those are the kind of athletes we need to get here. And turns out...
they finally did.
Yeah. Took the coach from that team coming to get those athletes, but they finally got those athletes.
That was November 3rd of 2001. He also set an SEC single record with 293 receiving yards. That has since been broken in 2012. Kobe Hamilton for Arkansas, under the tutelage, of course, of Bobby Petrino, went for 303.
Yeah, real quick, before people pointed out, you're confusing the games, Dunaway, because that was 2001. You're talking about, I think it was the 04 Alabama-LSU game, which, as memory serves, was like 27-3.
Yes.
And Saban actually called the dogs off in that game. That was, Lance, who was the Skylar Green. Skylar Green, yeah. I think Skylar Green was on that team.
You're exactly right.
And that was the game where it was men and boys. It's very rare I've seen Alabama more outmatched.
But that game, surprisingly, was only 27-3.
Yeah, it was something like that, 27-3. But that's only because Saban called the dogs off. I mean, Alabama, they could have beat Alabama 50-0 that night.
You can see now why Mal Moore wanted that guy so much.
Yeah.
This is going to be, we're doing SEC football by the numbers, 15 single game records that might never be broken from AL.com. This is going to be another difficult one. Kicking points in one game. Florida's Bobby Raymond, 23 points in a 53-14 victory over Florida State, December 3rd of 1983. He became the second SEC player to make 6 field goals in one game, equaling the mark by our friend, Auburn's Al Del Greco, the previous year. But in addition to that, Florida also scored 5 touchdowns, and he made the PAT after each.
It's rare that you get that many field goals in PATs. You know what I'm saying? Because normally, if you got that many PATs, they can't stop you enough to get the field goals.
Right. That one probably won't be broken. I know this next one won't, especially the way offenses run plays now. Ole Miss defense, they face the fewest amount of offensive plays ever in an SEC game. Do you guys want to guess how many plays they went against?
14.
That would be extremely low, Rocky.
That would be extremely low. I was going to say 45.
I mean, what do you guys think the average number of plays run in an SEC game now from an offense? 78, 75 to 80?
Yeah, it's probably lower than that. But
60 to 80.
Yeah.
When the Rebels beat South Carolina 33-0 on a rainy October 4th, 1947 day in Memphis, the Ole Miss defense didn't spend much time on the field. Gamecocks offense snapped the football only 24 times. They picked up one first down on its 30 rushing and 8 passing yards. 24 plays made.
That's pretty dominant.
Okay, what do you think the record for a punter punting in one game is? We had 17
returns. We had 17 returns.
It's a different game.
Yeah, I would say...
So it's got to be higher than 17?
No.
They had used different punters in that game.
I'd say 12.
I'll say 14.
This came back in Kentucky's 7-0 loss to Washington and Lee on September 29th, 1934. On that day, Kentucky's Burt Johnson, punted 30 times.
Jeez. What are we doing on second down, Coach? Just punt it.
I kick it again.
Just punt it.
30 times. And finally, I think this one could be broken. This is our final number. The longest punt in SEC history.
I mean, you know, if you get one that hits just right and rolls and the, I mean, you know.
We used to play a lot of bad artificial turf games.
Yeah, that was easier
then. Basically playing in the parking lot. I'll say the longest one is 81 yards.
I was going to say 82.
Well, maybe it won't be broken. Bill Smith from Ole Miss. In a Rebels 13-10 loss to Southern Miss on October 20th, 1984 in Jackson, Mississippi. He actually punted from the Rebels' 8-yard line. His punt landed to the Southern Miss 20. That's quite a bomb. Rolled the rest of the way to the end zone. 92 yards. The punt broke the record of the 89-yard punt established by Alabama's Dixie Howell in 1933.
Oh, Dixie Howell.
So you think there was a chance that was going to be broken in 92?
Well, I mean, if somebody punts from the 7, maybe one rolls through.
It's got to be a line shot over the guy's head.
Yeah, and then roll forever.
What do y'all think the most incredible record is, though, of those?
I mean, 9 interceptions in a game.
Yeah, I would say the 9 interceptions.
And as Bobby points out, that was against Auburn, by the way, back in the day. Auburn's defense, Brother Oliver, Bobby says, was the DB's coach, so he was coaching them up.
Really, Brother Oliver?
That's what he says.
Yeah, that seemed like that was in the 60s.
It was 1969. I wasn't alive. I'm just going by Bobby. He was upset we didn't mention it.
Yeah,
so I assumed he did his work.
He's right. Auburn was number 17. They won the game 38-12. Florida was number 7 going into that game.
Brother Oliver was already coaching in 69? He wasn't playing?
I'll confirm that.
Yeah. Do you guys think that Nick Saban's head would explode if he had a quarterback throw 9 interceptions?
In a season, maybe. Oof.
Games, had 263 against UCLA, had 301 against Arizona State. In that conference, he's virtually unstoppable. You throw in quarterback KJ Costello, the redshirt freshman going into his sophomore year, who got better and better at quarterback as the year progressed under David Shaw. JJ Arcega-Whiteside is one of the best wide receivers at 6'3", 220 in college football. This offense, almost 33 points per game last year, could get up to 38 to 40 points per game. The offense could be scary good this year.
One of the amazing things about Bryce Love doing what he did, and he became Jonathan Taylor, I think most people thought was the best running back in the country last year, is the fact that Stanford was next to last of their conference in passing. So you really, I mean, I know you said KJ Costello, Lance, and he's a nice quarterback, but he's not a guy that scares you to death. I mean, you would think Bryce Love was doing a lot of that against teams that were loading up to stop the run. And that makes it probably even more amazing that he was able to do what he did.
That's
last
why I
year.
Think the numbers can be just as good this year for Bryce Love, because KJ Costello is going to get better, and you've got really good wide receivers. I mean, 8 of your top 9 targets come back.
And so too does that offensive line. You got a senior at right tackle, a senior at right guard, a senior at center, a junior at left guard, and Walker Little, the left tackle, was a true freshman stud last year. So he's the young guy, sophomore. That offensive line is rock solid.
Not only the best offensive line in the Pac-12, it's probably a top 4 or 5 unit in college football. You've got 7 guys with starting experience, 94 career starts up there. Again, the offense is going to be really solid under David Shaw. Typically a really good defense. Defense is going to be the question mark. You lose 3 or 4 top tacklers, so defense coordinator Lance Anderson's got his work cut out for him. That along with the schedule, again, first 6 weeks of the season, if you can navigate that, I think Stanford has a special year. They're going to be underdogs in 3 games. Best case, they're 11-1. Worst case, they're 8-4. I think they hit their best case. I think they go 11-1, and I think Stanford ultimately wins the Pac-12 and makes it to the college football playoff.
Don't waste a loss the first 2 games. San Diego State beat them last year in an awkward game. I watched that one. We had 2 great running backs in that one. And then you had the loss to USC late in the year. They play them very early this year, so they got revenge the first 2 weeks on the schedule.
That's a huge game week, too, nationally. Fox game, Clatt will have that one, 7:30 kick for them in Southern Cal.
But it's a big ask for JT Daniels.
All right, 23 after. That's our 40 and 40 team today, the Stanford. Todd in Leesburg next with us on the phones this morning, talking a little football. What's up, Todd?
Hey, good morning, guys. I think that this situation is being blown way out of proportion with Jalen. And I think the media, and I listen to you guys every day, so I ain't dogging you. Love my sports, but I think this is just too much. You know, if you want to pick on professional players, that's fine. Them guys get paid. I think that what we're doing to Jalen, it's just way out of proportion. And, yeah, you know, Blake Sims and Jake Coker, that was really the first quarterback competition that was blown up. And it's kind of perpetuated because we are the best team in the nation. I get it as far as that goes. But I think we've gone way too far with this subject.
How did you think the Tyler Watts and Andrew Zhao competition? Was that a pretty intense one?
I think Phillip Sims and A.J. McCarron was, too.
Phillip Sims and A.J. McCarron for a while.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. It wasn't back and forth.
It went into the season.
It was kind of a preseason thing. Well, a little bit.
Well, that's what makes this one different, Todd, is that you have a guy who has been a starter for 2 years who is not expected to hold on to his job, and that's what makes this different. That rarely happens. When A.J. finally beat out Phillip Sims, that battle went into the season, but neither one of them had won the job the year before. They were replacing Greg McElroy. So you go into the season, AJ wins that job, and then it's his in 11, 12, and 13. There was never really any competition after that. And that's what makes this one so unique, is that you have a guy who has been so good and he has been the starter, but you know, the one aspect of his game that seems to be limiting a really good part of Alabama's offense, a really talented receiving core, has opened the door for another great recruit to come in and take over. That's different.
Let me pose a scenario for you. Let's say we put Tua in.
I bet I've done this scenario on the air for, but go ahead.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Because I've already said this. Let me see if I can get it right. Okay. First game against Louisville. Alabama's a 4-touchdown favorite. Tua throws 2 interceptions, and it's 10-7 at the half. What are Alabama fans screaming?
Exactly. So are we going to run Jalen out of town before he's even taken a snap? I don't think that it's fair what we're doing.
Well who's running Jalen out of town? Is it Jalen's dad back during the spring game when he said if he's not the starter, he'll be the most coveted free agent ever?
I agree.
That's what started all this, right?
But this man is 26-2, okay? And in all past
As I said yesterday, Todd, Alabama's 26. Alabama's 26-2 when Jalen's the starting quarterback. So that's that stat. It's not, you know, we never throw that out for, I mean, I think Jonah is likely 26-2 when Jalen's the starting quarterback too, right?
Jonah Williams, yes.
Yeah, tackle.
Right.
They never get credit. Those tackles never get credit.
Well, they
for the
don't.
Wins.
I mean, that is a quarterback stat. Never, you know, we just talked about Bryce Love, one of the best players in America. What's Bryce Love's record?
Yeah. What was Barrett Jones's record during his time in Tuscaloosa?
It was really good.
It was.
What was the best change you ever made in your life?
For me, can I do a co-change?
Sure.
In 1996, I really started to work out, and I really think that has kept me somewhat young. It's balanced my lifestyle. So I think really getting good proper exercise is important, but also the change to work with you guys.
Oh, Lance.
Oh, wow.
No, seriously.
Wow. Oh, Lance. Oh,
I mean, I've taken us to break, Jim.
No, we've stretched this thing about 10 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
about.
It's been, it's been a lot more fun. Work used to be a lot more stressful.
Oh, thanks, Lance. I thought he was going to say, can I do co-changes? I stopped drinking for a little bit, and I went back to drinking. For me, it has to do with work. I used to really over-stress out about every aspect of the show, and I just let it go a few years ago. I feel like some more of that's been creeping in lately, but I'm trying to go back to
kind of noticed it.
Just not worrying about it.
You don't need to relapse right now. We don't need to relapse.
You need the the hypnotist in Office Space. That Peter got.
Yeah, we hit the hypnotist. We lost him, though.
Yeah, we lost Peter.
But it was worth it.
Mine was, I guess, this is more of a decision than a change, but it was kind of a change because I moved parts of the state. But leaving JSU early was the best decision I ever made. You guys give me grief for not having a college degree.
Who needs that pesky degree?
I know, but had I not made that decision, I don't know what I'd be doing right now.
Will y'all save that real quick, Laurel, just in case Jack State wants to use that in a promotional campaign?
To leave Jack
State.
Well,
they don't care. I mean, he paid all that tuition up to a point.
Yeah, 6 years of it, Lance.
What about for you, Rocky?
The Diet Coke thing, I mean, that's the most recent.
But you said you've not seen any results.
I haven't
seen
a difference, but I'm glad I stopped because it used to be, it was bad.
Yeah, see, I've got
bad.
The girlfriend, I told her she needed to shut it down a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Brown hates how I get so, I don't know. Do I get irritated by how many Diet Cokes you drink?
Yeah, which is weird, as much alcohol as you drink. I just don't understand why you're judgmental on other people.
Zero calories, and nobody's given me any proof that it's damaging me at all.
It's not damaging. That's a bunch of bonk.
I didn't say it was damaging.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's a weird thing you get caught up on, though.
Second down.
Speaking of that, what do people take way too seriously?
Not even close. It's social media.
True.
I mean, it's people that do filters for pictures. I don't understand how you do that to begin with.
You're getting upset that people are getting this plastic surgery to match their Snapchat filter?
And then I've never been on Facebook, but I mean, some of the posts on Facebook.
A little political these days.
Well,
that's a good place to start. I think, you know, I would say
fantasy football.
We take everything too serious. I mean, you can't narrow this down in our country nowadays. We take everything way too serious, except for the things we should take serious. We don't take serious enough.
Yeah, I'm with Jim on this one. I think politics in general, and it's both sides. I mean, this is not a Republican or a Democrat or an independent thing. It's all sides. Everybody just yells at each other, and nothing gets done anyway.
When did we decide to stop meeting in the middle and making the country better?
Well, right? I mean, you know, you got to take stances on some things, but everybody gets all caught up in arms, and then nothing ever happens anyway. Nobody ever does anything up there.
In sports, I mean, dadgummit, it's supposed to be fun. We take it too serious sometimes.
Third down.
What conspiracy theory are you on the fringe of believing?
This flat earth thing. I haven't seen the curve in a while.
No, really, after watching a special on Reels about Marilyn Monroe and the relationship
Bobby
that
Kennedy?
She had with Bobby and with Robert Kennedy, I think she was killed. I think she was. I think she was
murdered.
Off. I think she was. Yes. Now, I think she was about to come clean.
Right.
And I think they went on and nipped her in the bud.
Well, the rumor was that she was with Jack, and Bobby had to come to the house and kind of break it off, and then somehow Bobby got involved.
Really?
Yeah. So she's very enticing.
Yeah. I think she liked the guys, and she liked the powerful guys, and I really think that she was knocked off.
You don't have one?
Oh, I do. I was going to let you go now.
Oh, mine is, and it kind of goes along with this.
JFK. Being the radio genius I am, I knew where you were going.
Yeah, the single shooter theory is a bunch of bunk right there, man. There was not, and I'm not even on the verge of believing this one. I'm 100% in.
Did you get this more when you went to Dallas?
Yeah, I mean, when you go visit Dealey Plaza and you look, you're like, zero chance that that guy acted, but he was a patsy. He was a total setup. Zero chance he acted by himself. Zero. If you believe, there's no way. I would believe more.
Do you think it was our government that killed him?
I have no idea. Well, I've got a theory.
No.
I believe it's more likely that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't even involved than that he did it himself, by himself.
Which is why they shot him in the courthouse.
Yeah. Jack Ruby.
Yeah, Jack Ruby had to take him out. Now, do a little study on Jack Ruby and you'll see.
I will tell you, mine is the new Coke thing. I used to believe it was just a bad idea. I do believe it was a publicity stunt now that they did it to make you desire
Coke Classic?
Coke Classic even more and more. I don't know why they had to do it,
yeah,
but they did it for that reason.
Well, I would look at the information. Was there a sales dip in 82 or whatever?
They had still probably 70% of the market share.
So I understand why would they change it like in 80, whenever, 83, 84.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't bring it back, though. The new Coke, just for a minute.
Just to see how bad it was?
Well, just for a novelty. Yeah. I mean, I think people would actually try it out again. People that have heard about this conspiracy theory that Dunaway was talking about. What about for you? Anything?
The Kennedy thing is always a big thing, but I have no idea. I have no theories on what. I would love to hear Brown's, what happened.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have speculated that there were mafia ties between the Kennedys. I mean, that's pretty heavily speculated.
So you don't believe it was Cuba or the communists or any of that?
Well, you know, you might have had a lot of people working in conjunction with one another. There were a lot of people that would...
See, Dunaway, we don't work together in the middle, see what happened? We get rid of a president.
There were a lot of people that benefited from John F. Kennedy dying. I'll just leave it at that.
Lyndon Johnson.
Well, he's one of them. I'm not saying he did it. I'm just saying there were a lot of people that benefited.
The military and the buildup towards Vietnam?
A lot of people benefited from
it. Yeah. I will tell you that this flat earth thing, though, I mean, you can make Brown's making a good case on the Kennedy assassination, the Marilyn Monroe, even landing on the moon. You could see where, okay, landing on the moon, it was important with the race with Russia, what the propaganda
and
would be good for.
All this stuff happened during the Kennedys.
But I cannot.
'60s.
But the flat earth?
No, there's no
I
support.
I still do not get this one.
No, there's no support of it whatsoever.
Still don't get it.
Yep.
Fourth down.
Okay, remember, the scarecrow wants a brain, the tin man wanted a heart, and the lion wanted courage. What is the reason that you are going to go see The Wizard of Oz?
I want a +6 handicap. That's all I want.
This guy wants a heart.
I just want a plus six handicap.
Heart.
I told my wife the other day, you guys see if I'm out of line on this.
I want abs.
No, we were talking about, it kind of goes back to question number
two. We're
going to
tell you Monday how you can get those, by the way.
My wife and I had this discussion. I said, the three things I really care about in life, trying to be a good Christian, right? I fail all that miserably. Trying to be a good husband and father, and I'm bad about that. And really, third is just getting my golf game better.
Where's the show fall?
Well,
no, it's in there.
I'll tell you.
Which goes back to my number one, man.
I know where you devote most of your time on those three.
Yeah.
I go to church every Sunday.
That's one day
a week. Most of the time.
I guess I would go ability to teleport. Would he give me that?
No, probably not. I think it's feasible.
If I
could want a bajillion dollars.
Would you rather have the ability to teleport or the six handicap?
The +6.
Wow.
I think I'd go +6 handicap over ability to teleport. I think I'd use the golf a lot more.
See, if you could teleport, it's just you by yourself. I don't think you can get somebody with you. So you're going to New York City by yourself.
Look, I know a lot of you are saying Jim would probably go with hair. But I've looked at pictures of me with hair. I think I look better now with no hair.
I've tried to tell you that. You way overreact to this.
Than I did with hair. I mean, I can go back and show you pictures with hair.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I had a full head of hair, it was, I think I'm better looking now. So I probably would go for a little humility.
You're better looking
just
now.
Just a little, not too
so
much.
So you sized yourself up as like a 4 last year. Are you up to a 4.5 now?
Oh, I feel like I'm a good 7 right now.
Wow. Good 7.
Yeah. I think I was 4.5 with the hair.
The only thing holding me down was my hair.
What about you, Rockstar? What would you ask
for? Oh, God. Reverse apathy. Like to reverse that for me in some areas.
Reverse apathy.
Reverse my apathy towards things.
So you're not apathetic enough.
Yes. Right. No, I know. Yeah. Oh, my God. I think I am. I wouldn't even show up to the Wizard if I was apathetic enough.
I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
You got, I'll catch up to you. Yeah. Go ahead and